Hello, I'm Pauline Rowson, crime author of the D.I. Andy Horton contemporary set crime novels, the Art Marvick mystery thrillers, the 1950s set Inspector Ryger mysteries, and two standalone thrillers In Cold Daylight and In for the Kill. You can find details of all my crime novels on my website at www.romark.co.uk. This podcast episode is an extract from Chapter 1 of Tide of Death, which is the first in the Inspector Andy Horton contemporary set crime series. Inspector Andy Horton is a flawed and rugged cop. He's instinctive, tough, and resilient, but deeply empathetic with a dry sense of humour. He's a man very much defined by a tormented past, but with hopes for his future. Living on board his small yacht in Southsea Marina since his estrangement from his wife, the sailing detective is a man rarely at peace unless he is on the sea or fighting crime. When fighting crime, he is prepared to take risks and is often fearless in his search for justice. He's been raised in children's homes and foster homes after his mother abandoned him as a child. He has a desperate need to belong and yet is always on the outside. Being alone is his greatest fear, yet he is alone. It is Horton's second day back in Portsmouth CID following an 8-month suspension on a charge of gross misconduct. Determined to prove his innocence of the charges that have wrecked his career and his marriage, Horton finds his personal investigation sidelined when the naked body of a man is found on the beach. Aided by Sergeant Cantelli, Horton sets out to find a killer who will stop at nothing to cover his tracks. As he starts to uncover dark secrets that someone would rather not have exposed, he risks not only his career, but also his life. Set against the atmospheric backdrop of the sea in the Solent area of Portsmouth and the Isle of Wight on the south coast of England. This extract is read by the actor Jonathan Rhodes. I hope you enjoy listening to it.
Tide of Death, a D.I. Andy Horton crime novel by Pauline Rowson. 1. Wednesday, 7 a.m. Andy Horton stared at the body. The face was almost obliterated. Blood had seeped onto the pebbled beach, dark red, staining the stones around the man's head. Bottle green seaweed was wrapped around his ankles, and he was naked, his arms outstretched, the palms facing upward, fingers curled. Horton averted his eyes and lowered his head over his torso, trying to catch his breath from his run. His stomach churned at the shock of such a gruesome discovery. It wasn't that he had never seen a dead body before or a violent death. On the contrary, in his job they were all too plentiful. No. It was the unexpectedness of running into one that temporarily unnerved him. He usually arrived after some other poor sod had found it. And he'd got out of practice. 8 months away from the sharp end had softened him. He straightened up, wiping the sweat from his face, and stared around. But all he could see was fog, and all he could hear was the mournful boom of the foghorns in the Solent, calling to one another like long-lost giants. He punched a number into his mobile. Why did this have to happen today, of all days? Only his second day back on duty after his suspension. But Sod's Law always prevailed. Either that or God had a wicked sense of humour. And if he did, then he couldn't be God, could he? But maybe he should be grateful to the corpse. This would give him a chance to show his colleagues that he hadn't lost his touch. D.I. Horton, is the DCI in?
No, sir, he's at the hospital.
He's ill? Horton asked, surprised.
No, sir, it's PC Evans. He was stabbed last night.
Christ, is he all right? Poor Evans, the station joker.
only 2 months away from retirement and counting the days. He's in intensive care, but they think he'll pull through.
Well, thank God for that, Horton replied with feeling, picturing poor Maureen Evans' face. He quickly relayed the news of his discovery on Portsmouth's beach and settled down to wait. He knew it wouldn't be long. He took another look at the body. Who was he? What had he done to warrant such a violent death?
Over the next couple of days, they'd begin to find out. The team would be assembled, people questioned, statements taken, and hopefully the victim identified. The investigative machine would swiftly gear itself into action, and he was determined to play a central role in it. He was still a good cop, despite the Lucy Richardson episode, which had cost him his position in the Special Investigations Department and earned him an 8-month suspension. Impatiently, he glanced at his watch, and as he did, 4 uniformed officers emerged from the fog, armed with tape and bollards. He instructed 2 of them to seal off the beach to the east by the Cruising Association slipway, and the other 2 to cordon off the area to the west below the old gunnery site. He looked up to see DCI Uckfield ploughing across the stones towards him. Horton pulled himself up. He couldn't afford to foul up on this one.
You're out of condition, Steve. He smiled at the man who had helped him to get back into CID. Too much time sitting behind that desk.
Tell me about it. You look disgustingly fit.
Well, I've had the time, Horton replied caustically.
They'd joined the force together 18 years ago and had been good friends since, but for the last 3 years, while on secondment to Special Investigations, Horton had seen little of Uckfield. They began walking towards the body. Horton said, What happened with Evans?
Fortunately, the knife missed the main arteries. I was just visiting the scene of crime, a house in Hemmings Road, just off the seafront, when I got the call saying you'd found a body. Evans and PC Kate Summerfield were called out by neighbours who were complaining about the noise from a party. Summerfield went inside to tell the kids to turn the volume down, and Evans went round the back of the house. She didn't know he'd been stabbed until a few minutes later.
Did they get him?
Who said it was a him?
Usually is.
Uckfield sniffed and retrieved a wooden toothpick from the depths of his jacket pocket.
The little scumbag got away, but we'll get him. You can bet your pension on that.
I don't think my pension's the safest thing to bet on, Horton thought, given his history.
Uckfield manipulated the toothpick in his mouth and stared down at the body just the other side of the blue and white tape. Horton had seen quite enough already, but he looked again. The grey hairs on the slender frame and the slackness of the skin told him their victim was middle-aged, probably late 50s. He was a tall man, about 6'2".
The body is oddly, positioned, offered Horton.
Why like that, as if he's on a crucifix? Can't have been washed up in that position.
No, and he's been placed, or was killed, just above the tide line, see?
Horton pointed to the line of seaweed that delineated the height of the last tide.
He's not wet, and there's no decomposition, so he can't have been here long. This isn't a popular spot for sunbathers, though it is sometimes used by nudists.
He's in good company, then. Uckfield stared down at the naked body. Could he be one of them?
A nudist sunbather, you mean?
Horton shrugged.
No idea. But if he was, then where are his clothes?
They should be beside him, along with his other belongings, like his wallet and watch.
Perhaps he left them in his car.
In the car park, a couple of 100 yards away.
He'd have to be some kind of pervert to walk here in the nude.
It's been known, Uckfield said cynically, replacing the toothpick in his pocket.
Did you see a car parked?
Okay, so the killer stripped him and took away the poor bugger's clothes after smashing his face to a pulp. It's obvious why.
To delay identification.
Then thank God he didn't hack off the hands.
Yes, and for DNA, Horton thought.
His face could have been beaten by the killer in an act of fury rather than deliberately to delay identification, and the clothes taken away as an afterthought.
Uckfield lifted one shoulder in a semi-shrug.
Possible.
I can't see a weapon unless our killer used a large stone to batter him. It could be any one of those around his head.
We'll get a search going, but my guess is it won't do much good. If our killer's got any sense, then whatever he used, it will be way out there somewhere.
Uckfield pointed in the direction of the sea.
When was high tide?
Just before midnight.
Uckfield rubbed his nose and looked thoughtful.
Could he have been brought in by boat?
In last night's fog?
If he was, then whoever did it would have to be a very good sailor.
But it's not impossible, is it? With GPS and a tender?
Uckfield was a competent sailor like him, but Horton wouldn't like to have done it.
No, just very difficult.
More officers had appeared, and Uckfield stepped away from the body as a large polythene tent was erected over it. Horton fell into step behind him as they moved down to the water's edge. The fog obscured the shores of Hailing Island across the narrow entrance to Langston Harbour. Horton could hear the slow beat of the waves as they washed gently onto the shore. As the sun grew in strength, it would burn off the fog to reveal another stifling hot August day. It would be difficult keeping the area sealed off. The sooner they could move the body and get the scene of crime team in, the better. He felt his pulse quicken at the thought of the intense activity ahead. The clock had begun ticking, and the race was on to find a killer before the trail grew cold. This was what he had missed.
For more information on my crime novels, please visit my website at www.romark.co.uk, where you'll also find lots more articles on how I write, the writing process, and the background to my crime novels and my characters. My books are available in paperback, ebook, on Amazon Kindle, and some are also available as audiobooks. They can be bought from any online retailer or bookstore, and also many can be loaned from UK, Commonwealth and USA libraries. I hope you will join me again to listen to more of my podcasts. Thank you for listening. Bye.